Welcome to another episode of the Baraza. It's episode 6. Africa's hidden sheath, part 2. At the Baraza, we aim to talk about Africa, the African story, and the African experience. I'm your host, Benjamin Walgwe, alongside Patrick Wandolo.
Yeah. Guys.
Patrick.
yeah, Benjamin. How are you doing?
I'm good. You asked for it.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to peeling the mask.
Yeah, unmasking the truth.
Yeah.
Unmasking the truth.
Unmasking the truth, to be precise. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Your dog is... Hey, 1 week later, that dog loves you, huh?
Yes, it does. I'm sorry about that. But, you know, he's a bit crazy because he barks at anyone who passes close to my dog.
What's his name?
Miles Ochieng.
Come on now.
For real. Miles Ochieng.
Your dog is called Miles Ochieng.
Yeah.
Dude, talk about it. Oh my God. So did you also name it based on the time, like how like Lewis got named based on the time of birth? So
no, it's
did you get it, you know?
Interestingly, my elder daughter, Whitney, is the one who came up with Miles. I don't know where she got it from, but then I just had to spice it up by giving him a Lua name. I just had to.
Miles Ochieng.
Yeah. As
wow,
you know, as the younger brother to his late elder brother, who was a cat, who was called Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars Ochieng. Oh my God!
The most arrogant cat you could ever come across.
I know cats tend to do that. I don't like cats though.
They're
difficult.
Yeah, he would come in because now he reached a point whereby he was so independent that he'd go out and come back in, and when I open for him the door, he's grumbling at me. Like, what's up with you, nigga? Why did you take so long opening the door? And then he goes, and if he doesn't get meat on his plate, he grumbles back and strolls right across me and goes outside.
Yep.
Yeah, but he was murdered, I guess. But yeah, we miss him.
Yep.
But he rests in peace.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, that was Thug Life. That was Thug Life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I'm excited yes. about show as we delve deeper into the injustice.
So today we're going to peel it back. We're going to peel the onion. We're going to peel it all back, you know. And we're going
for our audience, this is the show that we talk about what people might consider taboo or really don't want to think, you know, talk about, or are coined as conspiracy theories, because you know, most of the real stuff is spun around and labeled as conspiracy theories. So,
yeah.
In this show, we'll tell you the real. Probably yeah. that you won't find in mainstream media at times, because of course they're embarrassed about this. They want to be perceived otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
As the so-called democratic people, you know, I keep on talking about democracy in Africa.
Yeah.
But really, are they practicing what they preach, or have they done so in the past?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, Benjamin, let's go.
Yeah. So, I think from where we left off, Oh man, you know, I went back, I sat down. Your Chinese joke was just hilarious. I know it may be offensive to it may be offensive to some people. I know Pat didn't mean any harm, but
yeah, yes,
it was just man, dude, you killed me.
Yeah, just picture it like if you're going to watch a stand-up comedy, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, they say all sorts of things. You know, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, sometimes we have to be able to laugh at ourselves.
Sometimes,
but this is really serious. I think we have a responsibility of educating our people.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
In part two, you know, as you said, you were itching for it, so we had to do it, and basically we're going to unmask it. And we talked about where it began, which was the meeting, you know. We talked about the land rush, you know. We talked about the resources and how they were distributed.
Correct.
And then after that, of course, came, okay, guys, you know, Pan-Africanists, you have the like Kenyatta, you know. You have
the Nkrumahs,
the Kaundas, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So you have the Sankaras.
Yeah.
So there was that struggle, fight back. You know, there was that pushback, and eventually, guys got independence, right?
Yeah. But was it really independence? Okay, that's
exactly quote unquote independence, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So guys got independence, but again, I sat down and I was like.
Mm-hmm.
Are we really independent? So that question in itself threw me into a spiral, okay?
Yeah.
And it made me look at, okay, who are the players first? Because we all know, for example, I'll give you just, this is just my thought, okay?
Go ahead.
And it's not based on it, this is just Ben's thought.
Mm-hmm.
America is run like a corporation, you know.
Okay.
And I think you could have or you could have not come across the fact that, like, the Federal Reserve is privately owned, right?
Federal Reserve
of the U.S. is
privately owned.
Yeah.
Are you saying it's the Rockefellers and the Founding Fathers?
Yeah, you can look it up, but yeah, you'll find some interesting information about the Federal Reserve.
Wow.
But moving forward, so I thought about it and I was like, okay, if they're running their own
countries
and territories like corporations, then that means that they probably run Africa the same way.
Mm-hmm. This is like a foreign investment.
Yeah, exactly. Because they had chopped it up, they had divided it. They've divided the resources, and now it's everybody is on. You know, is on your marks, get set, go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's and they're trading amongst each other, and it's just it's a whole mess. You know.
Well,
so I looked at it and I was like, okay, let me find out who owned what again in Africa. And again, as we said, the main players were the British, the French, Portuguese, Germans, Italians, Spaniards, and Leopold.
Oh yes.
Leopold,
my friend and me.
I was about to say Belgium, but I held my tongue. And
the infamous.
Yeah, oh my God, Leopold shows up again.
Sadist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they all had different styles of rule, okay?
Yeah.
For example, the British, they had direct and indirect rule.
Mm-hmm.
The French had direct rule through assimilation, hence why...
Yes, assimilation.
Portuguese had direct rule through a comprada. And a comprada basically is a person... excuse me, who acts as a as an agent for foreign for foreign organizations engaged in investment, trade, or economic or political exploitation.
Wow.
Okay, that's a comprador. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And German had direct, the Germans had direct rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, how did they control their territories? They used chartered companies.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the chartered companies basically, you know, these are commercial organizations that enjoy special privileges granted by the state, usually encapsulated in a royal charter formed by investors seeking to exploit commercial opportunities in a particular branch of trade. So basically, these are privileged companies, okay?
With investors.
Exactly. And you and these are personal people. So you find somewhere like there's a duke, you know?
Is expecting return on his investment, and he finances
Exactly. So you have like Queen Victoria giving royal charters, you understand?
Yes, to come.
And these were just their cronies. So you want to go do what? I want to go explore, and I want to go what, pillage and take whatever I want to take. Okay, royal charter, boom, go. So you go, you do what you're doing, but it's yours, you understand? Because you formed a chartered company.
Yes.
And that's why you had like the Imperial British East Africa. You had the Royal Niger Company, okay? You had De Beers Company.
Yep.
You had the German East African Company in Tanganyika.
Wow.
You know, and the companies were used to exploit African resources. You know, company officials were brutal. They were corrupt. You know, they pocketed the money and made colonies bankrupt. They never consulted the home governments. You know, many were incompetent and unskilled. They, and then on top of that, they underestimated the cost of running colony, you understand? And to cut down on their costs, you'll find that the countries, the mother countries, moved in to administer the colonies directly.
Okay. Wow.
So now, when I was like, you know what? Okay. So let's go a bit deeper, because I asked myself, okay, fine. They were using the chartered companies, but moving forward, you gotta put a mask on yourself, and you gotta cleanse yourself, okay? Of all your atrocities, because you cannot be in the same business if you're perceived to be the same people who are doing the same things, and you're still doing the same things that we're talking about. But just in a more sophisticated way. So I'll give you an example. And the example I'm about to give you is, I told you there was the De Beers company, right? Who basically were involved in mining. We're talking about many years back.
Imagine that, and they're still there in South Africa, or rather, Southern
not
Africa.
Not even in the Southern Africa, yes. Now, yes. You find a company by the name, this is fast forward, right? We're in 2021. You find a company by the name of Debmarine Namibia.
Debmarine?
Yeah, Debmarine, D-E-B, Debmarine Namibia, okay? Which is basically a joint venture between the Namibian government and a diamond giant called De Beers.
These sneaky buggers.
So just to give you a sense of how much these guys are pillaging, okay?
Uh-huh.
Because these guys, they're not on, you know, there are two kinds of diamond mining. There's land and there's sea.
Yes, indeed.
Sea is more lucrative than land because you have to go back to the origin of the sea diamond, you know, which was many years ago, the stones from basically the heart of Southern Africa washed westwards along the Orange River and emptied into the Atlantic Ocean. You get? And at that time, it sparked a diamond rush in 1908.
Okay.
And today, six ships comb the ocean. And this is off the coast of Namibia, okay? And these six ships are owned by none other than Debmarine, Namibia.
We're talking about present day.
Present day, yes. Debmarine, Namibia. Who? The joint venture between the Namibian government and De Beers company, which means they're still doing the same thing in 2021 under our eyes.
This is so, so tragic.
Okay.
Really tragic.
Now, just to, again, to explain to you the amount of money they're making, okay? In terms of production, they produce in the range of 1.378 million carats a year. This is as of 2017.
Yeah. Whoa, that's a lot. Value?
1.378 million carats. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And you know the ocean diamond is
we're talking about diamonds.
Yeah, and it's much stronger because of the pressure. You know, in water, there's high levels of pressure.
Yes, yes.
So it's
forming the diamond.
Yeah, it's stronger because it has gone through wear and tear, being past hitting sediment rocks and all that, and etc.
Yeah.
So, you know. It's more lucrative and they get more for it. And yeah. And they have they're allowed to do this. Their current contract is up to 2035. And they have been given an area of 2,316 square miles of free ocean area, which is just under the size of Jamaica. I'm telling you, this is crazy.
Benjamin, this is painful.
Yep.
Try to put that into context. And why don't you ever stop to think?
Yep.
Why are these people jostling so much?
Yep.
To get the rights or to sign treaties to mine, why doesn't it ever hit us that we are not getting value?
Yep.
You know,
now
I just don't understand.
No.
But we also understand that these companies were formulated way back in the 1800s or even earlier with the very same aim of plundering Africa's resources.
Yeah.
So by the time they're moving out of Africa, giving us that mirage of independence, they know that the structures that they've put in place and the treaties they've signed will continue to propagate their plan. So they're not worried.
Yeah.
All they gave us was a local face.
Yeah.
In regards to leadership. And we actually thought, oh, now we're independent. Now we have one of our brothers, you know?
Yeah.
And a few of them, of course, were educated in the countries of the colonizers like Jomo, and not none of us not realizing that these are puppets that are placed there to serve the interests of their colonizers.
Yeah.
And so subsequent governments and how they finance governments and how they influence leadership in Africa is all in the aim of continuing to reap and plunder our resources. It's not for the benefit of the locals, because if they really cared so much about us, they wouldn't have been involved in the atrocities that they did from the onset.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be financing proxy wars and selling weapons to us to kill each other.
Yeah.
So all this talk about democracy and stuff is fake.
Hey, what's Ochieng annoyed about, honestly?
Oh, Ochieng is missing his mom. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
So he's outside, you know, in the sitting room next to the window, barking at everything that passes by. Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
And it's tragic. Like, I'm reading about the Royal Niger Company that was chartered in 1886.
Yeah.
That amalgamated business British interests in the Lower Niger region.
Yeah.
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 And it was chartered to administer the Niger Delta.
Yes.
And the country along the banks of the same River Niger.
Yeah.
And Benue, I think, Benue River. There was a lot of palm oil. Palm oil was a major export.
Yeah.
And the main imports were cloth and alcoholic beverages, of course, for those crazy guys. And the company secured its monopoly of trade in the area of present-day Nigeria against French and German competitors when crumbling to Africa.
You have what?
When during the scramble, it secured its monopoly of the trade within that area, which is present in Nigeria.
Yes.
So all these companies were financed by investors in the West.
Yeah.
And now, if we put it in today's context, it's the same thing.
Yep.
BP, Shell, and all these other ones now officially being sponsored by foreign governments.
Yep.
To plunder Africa.
Yep.
And also to influence policy.
Yep.
So they also lobby, they send bribes, and they go to the extent of even using non-governmental organizations to influence things.
Let me get to that.
I touched the hornet's nest, right?
The hornet's nest, man.
Okay, so run with it.
So you'll find that, you know, early administrators, you know, were sons of rich men in their various countries. Especially Britain. Many were Oxbridge products. Now, Oxbridge is basically Oxford and Cambridge graduates.
Okay? Ah,
yep. And the one example is like Margaret Thatcher. The son that I was talking about, Zimbabwe.
Yep.
It was Margaret Thatcher's son, and she had to come and compensate and pay to get her son back.
No.
Yes, they were the ones going to do what they were going to do, you know. And you know, the British rule in Africa, it differed in regions, because
they were very tactical.
You have example Egypt and South Africa, which was direct rule, okay. And then mostly they used indirect rule, using existing political institutions, like the paramount chiefs. You understand?
Yes, 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 indeed. Yes, indeed.
And
yes.
For example, indirect rule in East Africa, I'll give an example of Uganda. They used the Baganda chiefs, you know, Banyoro, Acholi, Lango, the Karamoja people, you know, and then they established rule in the Acholi later, like I think like 1909, you know. And what happened based on that, the Acholi lagged behind in development and education. And that is the area which today is disturbed. And that is where Lord Resistance Army is.
Let me ask you, when we say they lag behind in development and education.
Okay, I know where you're going with that.
Yeah, I know where I'm going.
I mean in terms of where the British felt that they were directing, you know, they were directing us to.
Their influence and what their game plan
was.
Yes,
yes. So.
Yeah. That's better because when we perceive education as having an English accent as we do from our former colonizers, then
100%, yeah.
Yeah, because you know we're also looking at education, like in Kenya, when the colonialists came in, they called it what, the 3 hours or what? What they allowed Africans to learn, was it read, write, and what? Read, write, and something, there were 3 R's. And that was the only level of education enough to communicate and
maybe,
to take
maybe,
care of
it. Maybe read, write, and run.
Run, brother, run! You know, no, it's crazy, man. It's sad, but you know, sometimes, you know, some of these topics are so heavy, we have to, you know, throw in a bit of humor here and there. But you see, they even chose the kind of education they wanted to give us, not to for us to grow and learn and become specialists in our own right, but just enough for them to use us the way they want.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's really sad.
100%. You know?
Yeah.
So, back to where I was.
Yeah, the companies.
Yeah, so now we go to how they structured their systems, okay? And I think you'll get to realize the structure is what for a very long time Africa was, until it started to change in some ways, okay? Mm-hmm. So when they took a colony, okay, they set up the colonial office, and then you had the governor of the colony, and then you had secretary of state, and then you had the provincial commissioner, and then you had the district commissioner, and then you had the district officers, and then you had the traditional or warrant chiefs. And then you had the village headmen, okay?
Lots of countries haven't changed that structure.
Exactly.
We changed ours most recently with promulgation. It's so sad. It's sad and pathetic at the same time.
It's hilarious. So.
Remember in the last episode we spoke about effective occupation? That is exactly what we're talking about.
Both. It's a machine. Now let's proceed.
Wow.
So this is how the administration was. You know, it was divided. They divided the territories into provinces, districts, and locations. Okay.
Sounds very familiar.
And this is basically indirect rule. You understand?
Yeah.
Hence you have the traditional warrant chiefs, then the village headman, which then trickles up. Now, the reasons for, you know, indirect rule was basically, and they were smart. It was cheap because you're using the same villagers to man the same villagers.
Yeah. You know, it's a company, remember, we are reducing our operational costs.
100%. You know, and you know, they the word that they actually used, because they believed Africans were not capable of ruling themselves, you know. So they termed us as half devils, half children, you know, because we had to be placed under tutelage.
You know, half devils, half children. It's like we were eating each other, we were cannibalizing each other before they came. I mean, it's just,
you know,
it's, we had structures. And you see, it's interesting that they say that at the same time they were using our local structures that were already in existence.
100%. And they also believe that the process of civilization had to be given in doses to avoid Africa, you know, the African having like like growing a big head.
The drastic change.
And although they did not want to detribalize Africa, and the reason for that, you know, they didn't want Africans cut off from their roots. Hence, they created reserves where ethnic groups were confined. So they planted the seed of tribalism, you understand? So they used our own cultures against us, you know?
Yeah.
Forming collaborators. That's why the Paramount Chiefs were termed as collaborators, you know?
And
given positions that would progress the community. That's what they did.
Yeah, they planted the seed of divide and rule through 100%. negative ethnicity.
Exactly. And on top of that, they used chiefs to do their dirty work, collect taxes, which they overcharged, you know.
Snitch on the locals.
What people don't know is before the Berlin Conference, there were no taxes paid. But after 1914 Berlin Conference, taxes started being paid. Hence, the tax collection came. You know, they recruited, the chiefs were also used to maintain law and order. They were used to recruit people for commercial labor and as carrier corps during the World War. You know?
Very true.
Yeah. The chiefs provided livestock and grain for the war. Now, you're providing food for, you don't even have anything to do with it. Why are we even in the war in the first place? We were chilling.
In our simple ways and getting along, doing our barter trade. We were good.
They were also used to pass unpopular policies, you know, compulsory labor. So, course, the chiefs were hated. So it just boiled hatred amongst ourselves, you know, and the type of rule was exploitive. It was exploitative, you know. Africa was mined very quickly, dude, very quickly.
And just to mention.
And hold on. The worst part about it, the icing on the cake is the rule was abusive. No technological transfer in exchange for solid materials, raw materials, nothing, you know?
Yeah, there was nothing in exchange. It was actually what you were given in exchange was brutality.
Exactly. Subsidies were given from London only to pay colonial administrators, you know? And the British rule just intensified existing tensions and civil wars, you know, that already prevailed in Africa. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So they looked, they found a gap, and they were just like, man, let's run with this. Yeah. So Patrick, because, you know, this stuff gets me fueled, right?
Yep.
We talked about De Beers. You remember De Beers?
Yep.
And then you talked about, because now we want to dive into the companies. We want to lift this veil, this hidden sheet, this Africa's hidden sheet. You know,
we also had
who are they?
Yeah, we also had the Dutch West India Company.
Yeah, but those, you know, were swallowed.
Yeah, they were swallowed. You know,
they
amalgamated, and you know, the partnerships.
Yeah,
and it's just
so that Royal Niger Company that you talked about. Okay.
Yeah.
What you missed was The name, because they had to mask themselves, so they changed the name from Royal Niger Company, okay, to United Africa Company, okay? Okay.
The metal morphed into the...
Yeah, yeah. And then in 1930, guess who took over?
Who did?
Unilever.
You're not serious.
Yeah, Unilever. So, United Africa Company continued as a subsidiary of Unilever until 1987 because they couldn't be associated anymore with Royal Niger. You know, it was absorbed completely by Unilever. So today, Unilever is Royal Niger Company.
All the hoax, my brother.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. There
was a reggae song, and there was this, I can't remember by who, and he was talking about the Unilever company. And I just thought it was one of those weed-influenced kind of inspiration kind of things, you know. But the guy really had something going.
Like, I'm telling you, man.
I can't remember who it is. Who was it? If you hear the sound. What's his name? Yeah. Mutabaruka.
Mm-hmm.
Mutabaruka spoke about that. You know, he was a poet, but, you know.
Are you reggae. Serious?
And now, yeah, Mutabaruka spoke about Unilever.
Oh, man, you got to send me that one.
Yeah, we'll look for it. Yeah, and look for this poem by Mutabaruka.
This poem by Mutabaruka.
Yeah, it's very deep. Yeah. My late elder brother used to listen to it, but now it really resonates with me. You know, when you kind of get awakened to what really happened here, but you know. It's immoral because we are actually not free.
No. No.
The concept
of free is unheard of, yeah.
And looking at it, if you look at the private sector within our countries, it's full of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
In all industries, from oil and gas to retail to, oh my God, it's the same ballgame.
Yeah,
because Unilever was producing how many products in Kenya?
Yeah, but you remember Royal Niger was in the Niger Delta region.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of palm oil.
Yep.
And if you look at most of the products Unilever produces, is oil-based, right?
Yep.
Exactly. Oil extract. So it began, and then they just expanded out.
They diversified their investment.
Exactly.
And their product mix.
And the portfolio is huge. But anyway, moving on. So you have Imperial British East Africa Company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who were granted a royal charter by Queen Victoria? This was in 1888, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Led by the one and only William Mackinnon, who I think we've come across.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He's strolled these streets quite a bit.
This was in 1893. So they transferred administration rights, you know, of the territory to the British later on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you remember I talked about running a colony is expensive. It's not easy. So they underestimated what it would take in terms of management,
investment,
management, resources, and all that.
Yeah,
to just maintain a colony. So it was expensive. So they transferred back the rights to the British government. Okay.
Who had the capacity?
Exactly. And what the British government did was say, okay, fine. British East Africa, let's divide it. And they divided it to form the Uganda Protectorate in 1894 and the East African Protectorate, later called Kenya, in 1895. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Now, the company was succeeded by the East African Association. Now we're moving towards independence, right?
Okay.
And
East African Association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the EAA, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, the British demanded the government. They demanded, they dominated the government.
Yeah, because they were really into the local administration.
Yeah, they dominated the government. Like, majority of them were in the government. You know, so they didn't really also leave. Then the East African, you also have to consider that the East African Association was founded by Harry Thuku.
This is an interesting development. Is it a development or?
Yeah, and then Kenyatta joined. This was in 1921. Then Kenyatta.
Kenyatta joined later.
One year later.
So Harry Thuku had started collaborating with our colonizers earlier.
To be honest, I don't know, but from what it looks like, I could. I can't call it, but yeah. You know, it looks that way. And then Kenyatta joined 1 year later. The EAA's main purpose was to recover Kikuyu's land. Okay. Lost mm-hmm. when the Kikuyu became, when Kenya became a British colony in 1920.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1925, the EAA was disbanded, you know. And its members reformed the KCA, which is the Kikuyu Central Association.
Mm-hmm.
3 years later, Kenyatta became the organization's general secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, the reason why he again went to Lancaster to fight for the lands was because the British were now saying, we need to form East African Community.
It wasn't for our benefit, and these guys didn't know that it wasn't for our benefit. It's a common trade area for them.
Yep.
Wow.
You know, which would be disastrous for the KCA, if you understand.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So, and they wanted to divide the regions into Kenya, Uganda, and Tanganyika.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the story goes on and on and on and on and on, you know, we can go on and on, but let's come back to and stick to the ball. We then have the British South African Company, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which was mainly for exploration of minerals. And one of the directors included the Duke of Abercrombie. Okay? Later, it became Charter Consolidated Limited. Okay.
Okay.
Founded in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
And the company's line of business included holding and owning securities of companies, even other than banks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you were to look at who owns Charter Consolidated? It's actually Colfax. Have you heard of Colfax?
Yeah.
You know Colfax?
God. Yeah.
Yeah. And. Yeah. And now, if you look at the ownership of Colfax, okay?
Yeah.
You have T. Rao Price Associates. You have the Vanguard Group. You have BlackRock Fund Advisors. You have Cook and Beeler LP. You have Dimensional Fund. You have Cardinal Capital. You have Diamond Hill. You have Wellington Management. You have South Point, and you have Goldman Sachs.
Wow.
So you understand how systematic it is.
It's crazy.
It's not a joke. Now, if you go further, okay, and you dig even further, and you pick any random owner, a shareholder of Colfax, and let's say you pick the Vanguard Group, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vanguard Group was founded by John C. Bogle, okay?
What?
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Now, you have to ask yourself, who is John C. Bogle? Now, John C. Bogle, you know, comes from Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah.
But if you go deeper, you'll find that the British were very present in the US, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back in John C. Bogle's lineage, guess what?
Who's that?
It has slavery, because you have Robert Bogle.
Uh-huh.
Who was a slave trader.
Yes, and a lot of these companies were actually established for slave trade, from what I read.
Yeah. So you have a lot of, you know, and this guy Robert Bogle, man.
Yeah, tell me a bit about it.
Robert Bogle, basically, he was into sugar production, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when the British finally abolished slavery, he had about 286 slaves in his estate. You know, and on top of that, when they banned it, the government still mm-hmm. compensated them about 6,000, at that time, 6,230 pounds to say, we are sorry, we are destabilizing your business. But yeah.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Crazy, dude. It's crazy.
We were treated like animals.
100.
It's so sad, you know. I don't even know what to say about this.
Now, it doesn't stop there, because you have to look at how it's done. Now, let's even go deeper into exactly mm-hmm. how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy called Dr. Howard Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas, right? He's a senior lecturer of economics and international at the International Institute of Social Studies.
At the Howard Nicholas. Uh huh.
Yeah, at the Hague, you know.
Right. Right.
And he was looking into. He does research into economic warfare and all this stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you find that, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa. Africa has been intentionally kept poor. Okay, it's by design.
Yeah.
The West will not allow Africa to progress. It's not in their best interest.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. They have to keep Africans doing what they're doing and peddle that, you know, it's our fault.
And it's our fault, yeah. and we need saving. And
exactly.
Because self-sufficiency
and what they did is basically they made sub-Saharan Africa dependent on material production, you know.
Yep, very true.
Vast resources, but look at the bottom line, you know, nothing.
Yeah, who's actually gaining?
We're getting peanuts for our raw materials. You know,
actually,
no country can develop PAT without manufacturing.
No.
And you'll see that over the last 15 to 20 years, manufacturing has declined and is still declining.
It's actually declining. And we are opening up our economies to imports.
Exactly. And you know, when you use the word industry, you have to realize that industry involves two things. It involves production and manufacturing. It involves, production and manufacturing.
And manufacturing and distribution, you know, the logistics part of
it. Yeah, but the bulk is mining.
Yeah.
And, you know, which has caused the industry to fall.
It is really sad, but it's the sad truth.
And you'll find that it's intentional, because if Africa realizes its full potential, and realizes its manufacturing potential, the world will have a problem. You know that.
Yes, there will be a huge problem because first we will stop exporting our raw materials because we are manufacturing locally.
And in terms of
dictating prices, because we are value adding and everything, we'll be the price dictators. Our economies will grow because now Europe, we'll be left with importing mainly.
Exactly.
So we'll be earning foreign exchange, and our economies will be growing stronger, our currencies will be stronger.
Exactly.
And losing foreign exchange.
Exactly. And you find that, you know, the few times, I remember we spoke about it in one of our episodes where we talked about the growth rates, you know, and the forces that have in different situations made Africa develop a bit and then stagnate. And, you know, those the Korea, Japan, Taiwan, you know, industrialization. Mm-hmm. And then next was China. You know, Europe had already done it.
Yeah, the emerging tigers.
Exactly. And you know, if you look at the emerging markets that produce raw materials versus the emerging markets in manufacturing, you know, it's there's a huge difference. You know.
Yes, indeed.
Currencies are collapsing. You know, most in sub-Saharan Africa. You know, and it's getting worse.
And now
we've been condemned to the role of just producing raw materials.
And now, to make it worse, we're also selling our land. So food production, as populations in the West grow, and they need to feed their people. And of course, there's a higher demand for products.
Yeah.
Then now they have to come back to Africa and demand more of us. Now, how do they demand of us now? Purchase the land, so it's an extension of their countries.
Yeah.
While we sell our most fertile land, and what are we left with?
Yeah.
So now we are left to be dependent on them who are going to add value to the produce from our lands and sell it back to us.
Yeah.
It's pathetic. It's just
crazy. You know?
It's crazy. And all the multinationals, because I just picture all the multinationals in Africa.
Yep.
They're involved in value addition. But are we, as Africans, getting the real value? Our economy is growing.
No, they're not.
No, because we are not selling finished products to the rest of the world and creating strong brands. You know, we have, you know, like cereals for breakfast. We don't have our own brands.
Yep.
We produce most of the corn and wheat.
Yep. And you know, Nestle were being sued the other day, you know?
Oh, they were?
Yeah, because of the cocoa farms in Cote d'Ivoire. I think it was Cote d'Ivoire, Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
For Well, call it modern day slavery, because the conditions of the workers, and they were using children, you know,
child labor.
Child labor, and outside of that, when they went to court, they were taken to court, and the U.S. court, basically the ruling was they cannot be charged for international crimes in a U.S. court. So they went scot-free, or rather they're going to go scot-free.
Yeah, technicalities, of course, they still have to look out for one another. Those countries, we take you back to those 14 countries that were involved in the Berlin Conference. They're still looking out for each other.
Yep.
And if we go further and look at the composition of the United Nations, the Security Council, and the permanent members, and all that, you see the same players. Mm-hmm. World Bank, same player.
Yeah. So, though you have to ask yourself, you know, how did they condemn us to the role of, you know, raw material production? Now, number one, aid. Mm-hmm. You know, aid for a little infrastructure. You know?
Carrot and stick.
Exactly. And basically, you know, money for raw material extraction. And what do they give? Money, power, guns, and creating mm-hmm. stability. You know,
yeah.
number two is debt. So here's where we come, because you've kept on mentioning something very consistent. World Bank, World Bank, World Bank.
Yep, yep.
And debt, you know.
Debt is a powerful way of economic.
You have like, for now I'll say a bank that was formed in 1950 by the mm-hmm. IMF, CIA, and American State Department, okay? The role was to lend money to developing countries, to indebt them as a form of control.
Shylocks.
Basically. You know. Yeah. So they would go country after country offering loans. And if you don't accept, you gotta go.
You're being forced to take the loan.
Of course. That's how they keep you in debt. And that's how, when you default, they pillage your resources. Because what is the collateral? Probably land, probably a port, probably something. That's the collateral. When you default your debt,
yeah, there has to be something.
Sinker.
Yeah.
They got
China learned from the best, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know how they put it is they give you the illusion that when your country is pro debt, then you're attractive to foreign investment,
which is just preposterous.
I'm telling you. And then you have monopoly buying structures, you know?
And there you are, then you have to give them...
For all raw materials...
Subsidies
and basic agricultural goods produced by developing countries. And you'll find that only 4 multinationals buy these products. You may think it's many, you know, this person is exporting. But at the end of the day, you'll find, just like we've seen in fuel, even in agriculture, you'll find that there are 4 multinationals who are distributing.
Major multinationals, yes.
Multinationals who are receiving this stuff and distributing this stuff. You know? And in order to control the market and production, they force all the producers to produce the same uniform product.
And the same quality.
For example, Hass avocado. How many types of avocado do you think are in the market in Africa?
We have several.
But right now, it's being promoted everywhere. They tell you produce Hass. Now,
which has the highest revenue, yield, and everything.
Yeah. But they're controlling, because guess what?
Yeah, they're controlling.
If you don't produce Hass, you're not the kind of money you're trying to make. You're not going to make it, because no one is going to buy from you any other brand.
Yeah, you have dead stock. It will be.
That's what is moving. Yeah. So they are controlling even the type of produce that we are producing.
Yeah, by the demand that they create.
Yeah, and if you refuse, they go to the next country, they give a couple of dollars, and they're like, you know what, are you going to produce us? Yes, okay, fantastic. Now produce us. And they say, World Trade Organization wakes up and says, well, the price of Hass avocado is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Come on now. Are you kidding me?
Methodical conspiracy.
Of course.
Economic slavery.
Yeah, and if you don't produce what we want you to produce, then we go to another country.
You're either off with us or against us.
Yeah. You know? And yeah, then now we come, yeah. And then now we come to institutions, which is WTO, IMF, okay? And this is where the economic warfare begins, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rich control the poor. That's how it is.
Yeah.
You know, they set up institutions to 100% control impoverished countries. They make sure countries keep on producing what they want them to produce. You know,
and constant
imbalance of payments to control the countries. They destroy the self-sufficiency of the countries. And I'll give you an example. In Malawi, the finance minister, that guy was instructed to destroy all grain surplus stocks. Yeah. I'll tell you.
Are you serious?
You can even create a drought if you want. I'm telling you. But anyway, you know, you'll find in 1970, for example, in the US Congress, they were discussing and they agreed not to allow Latin America to produce food. That is why Latin America, they 100% import everything, but they have land.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
How evil and deceptive.
Yeah.
People, a race can be and sleep comfortably in bed, knowing what you've done.
Yeah.
Just by virtue that someone.
And you know, and you know when you hear WTO talking, most of the time they're saying Africa's destiny is production of raw materials. Who told you? We can control the whole food chain. We can control the whole chain from production to manufacturing to even retail. We can't control that.
Yeah, so and the minute we start doing that, they become redundant.
Yeah, so they come up with new institutional economics, you know? And they tell you, corruption is affecting your economy. How now?
And they're the most corrupt people.
Yeah, whereas raw material production, you know, fuels corruption. Africa doesn't need all this, everything they're peddling that, now you need to focus on poverty alleviation. Yes, we know that, but we got to know how we got to fix it ourselves.
Or LGBTQ. What the hell?
But seriously, we're not going to go back there. But
that's cool.
You know,
I take a step back.
Yeah, Africa doesn't need all that equal distribution. We need aggressive industrialization, dude. Aggressive. A good example is China. When they shifted from communism to capitalism, boom. Look at them. Everybody's talking about China.
Within 20 years, they've surpassed
manufacturing
and technology.
Manufacturing will answer will be the answer to all your problems. Whether it's job creation, whether it is whatever, that is the answer.
You see, and the vote for that.
But they just want to keep us away from industrialization by making us focus on things like poverty reduction.
Yeah. Or human rights.
Yeah. And
look,
watch
the kind of people who are speaking out in terms of human rights.
Yeah. And then on top of that, if you read a book by John Perkins, it's called The Economic Hitman, okay? He actually spoke about his role because he actually worked for, say, the bank, you know? And he was told, basically, it's called predatory capitalism. In one hand, you have the gun. In the other hand, you have millions of dollars. Okay?
Yeah, now, I have heard of that.
Yeah. Now, look at it this way. 5% of the world's population is in the U.S. And that 5% consumes 30% of the world's resources. Yet, half the world is on the verge of starvation.
So the rest of the world is left with 70%.
Exactly, to sort themselves out. And now,
and that,
yeah. And now John Perkins, he was basically an economist for the NSA and the CIA, okay?
Yep.
And he was tasked to look at different countries and their resources, like oil and stuff like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then on top of that, give a loan to those countries, mm-hmm. okay?
I'm sorry. Miles is acting up.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This
Miles,
is crazy.
Miles. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. Sorry. I know it distracted you.
No. So yeah. at the end of the day, you know, they would give the loan to those countries, but the money would not actually go to the country, but it would go to a corporation to build to build huge infrastructure projects, you know, and they would make huge profits in return. You have power plants, you have industrial parks, you know, things that would benefit a few wealthy families in the country, you know, the ones that own the industries. But majority of the people would suffer and are left holding a huge debt. Okay.
And you see, we're not even talking about the past. This is happening currently.
Yes. And now when you can't pay back your debt, you know, you have to sell your resources, oil, gold, you know, and they buy.
By the way, sorry. Have you read about what's happening in Zambia with the Chinese?
Yeah, it's obscene. I think they lost their airport, right?
Yeah.
Lusaka Airport, because
it was
collateral for debt.
Yeah, and they even have Chinese cops.
Yeah, they had appointed their assistant police commissioner, and I think the people. There was a strike. Yeah, your police, and, your deputy, you know, police commissioner is Chinese. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, and you know, it's pathetic. And China has learned from the best, you know. And if you look at even in Asia itself, is it Bangladesh that they took their port?
Yeah.
Yeah, because of debt.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
So Chinese ambitions are not only restricted to Africa, but they're employing the same strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you guys want finance? You remember the African presidents went to China for a meeting, and the Chinese were dishing out loans like candy.
Yeah.
African leaders were all there thirsty because, oh, you want a kickback? They're always good with it.
Yeah. And yeah,
but they do not know the terms and conditions of, or rather they're privy to it, but they just don't care, because a lot of these presidents are personally gaining these monies, apart from that greater good that the money should be used for.
Exactly.
And then the worst thing then happens, yes, you've been given a loan, and then our local people mismanage the same funds. So we're paying interest for money that's been pocketed by a few corrupt individuals. So it hasn't even satisfied its purpose. Because look at it this way, Benjamin. Right now, you know, Lake Victoria has vast fish resources.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we are busy eating tuna canned tuna.
Yeah.
By now, we should have been tinning our fish, processing our fish, exporting tilapia and Nile perch to the rest of the world, making leather products. Is it fish? Yeah, this fish skin is used to make skin, products,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's fish oil, cod liver oil, and blah, 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 you know, all that.
Yeah.
Which is value addition.
100%.
But nothing.
Yeah.
We had pyrethra in Nyanza.
Cotton.
Cotton, you know.
Yeah. Sugar.
Used to... I mean, it's, and all these industries are grinding to a halt because, first of all, with the capitalism, with and all the kind of treaties and trade agreements we have with China and the rest, which let cheap imports in to our countries that kill our local industries just when they are trying to get off the ground.
Yeah, you have places like EPZ, the places like EPZ, the jeans are made, they're sent out, they're branded Hilfiger, it comes back, and then you buy it at $6,000.
At, yeah.
I'm like, well, damn.
$150.
How now?
It's our Nescafe.
So check this out, John Perkins, right?
Yeah.
His first assignment was in Indonesia. Okay, mm-hmm. Which was plagued by civil war and political mm-hmm. unrest, right?
Yep.
His task was to create a report that would convince the Indonesian government that they needed mm-hmm. to build a very expensive electrical system. It will help progress the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still hired their corporations to do it.
Mm-hmm.
After that project, the guy was promoted to chief economist. He was promoted. Promoted. Then in Cuba.
Wow.
You remember when I talked about the meeting where they agreed that South America should not produce?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So now they were still discussing South America. And basically, because they said that Cuba was spreading communism across, you know, the continent,
which wasn't good for them.
Exactly. So
then, it's not exploitation friendly.
Yep. And basically, the president of Ecuador, you know, was also against uh-huh. it. So they mm-hmm. took out the then, you know, president of Cuba at that time. And after that, they took out mm-hmm. the Ecuadorian president at that time. I think it was Omar Torrijos. No. Panama. Omar Torrijos was Panama.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was Ecuador and Panama who were against the decision, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they were opposing Operation Condor.
Wow.
Which that was that operation. They both got killed in similar accidents, which was the world-renowned private plane crash.
Their favorite.
Yeah. Dead. You know. And you'll find even the CIA, you know, they have a hand in most president assassinations, especially in Latin America.
When you drag that in now, it opens a can of worms, especially, you know, when you talk about someone like Edgar Hoover, for example.
Yep.
How many people did he kill? First of all, it is in America itself.
Yep.
With his COINTELPRO project.
Mm-hmm.
Africa, Patrice Lumumba and the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm X killed via proxy, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest. So what these guys did during the civil rights movement and in those days was just mm-hmm. crazy, because they had to stifle proper governance in Africa. and Pan-Africanism.
Yep.
They had to find a way to kill Pan-Africanism. And Gaddafi was one of the remnants of Pan-Africanism, so he had to go.
Yep.
And now look at what that Libya.
100%. And you know, this is what is called predatory capitalism. Yeah. And the ideal way is any good CEO will make sure, you know, all his employees are okay and does everything, mm-hmm. you know, pays taxes, everything. But now the style of predatory capitalism is the only mandate is of the business is for profit, maximize profit regardless of the socioeconomic cause.
Yeah, you know? It's not about the well-being, employee well-being. Or CSR, so to speak, corporate social responsibility, which would be in this case the locals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what has changed? But you know, when we lay it all out, what has changed from the scramble of Africa to now? It's just that the locals are getting a few coins right now, mm-hmm. and most of the infrastructure that they're financing and constructing in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
is to facilitate the proper plunder of our resources, so to speak.
Totally.
You know, the organized plunder of our resources, because the corporations and the multinationals need this infrastructure to be able to deliver the raw materials for value addition in their countries of origin. So without that infrastructure, they can't reach deep inside Africa.
Yeah.
So their presence here is also, it helps because they are locally involved. They seem to be. Involved in corporate social responsibility, but they know exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
That's just a smokescreen to perceive the company as a company that is really adding value.
Corporations should, you know, serve the public interest, you know? Corporations run the world policies at the end of the day.
Yes.
It starts with you and what you're doing. So at the end of the day, you know, we need to search and spread the story behind the story, you know? We need to you know, shine a light on issues. We need to question.
But you know, Benjamin, we know exactly what they're supposed to do, but when we dig into the genesis of these, what their missions were, don't you think it's a very far-fetched expectation?
It's far-fetched, but you know, I was heading somewhere because there has to be accountability. So you know, we have to question our leaders and government policies. You know, we have to use local and community power to change the law and to push for what we want. You know, we have to force companies to label things like even GMOs. You know, like some countries have. You know, some counties in the US have, you know.
You have to label, and
that is what will control, because if someone is perpetuating that their products are non-GMO, and you know, that's where like the Bureau of Standards come in. They have to look into these products and they have to safeguard their own people. They have to make corporations understand that they have to serve personal interest.
I concur fully. I concur with you fully, Benjamin. But there's one thing really perturbs me is that, yes, with all this expectation, and we know the way things should run.
Yeah.
But with the history of the puppet and the puppeteer, whereby we know that leaders are imposed upon us or are financed, or somehow there's someone behind the African leader that is not African.
Yeah.
Who will sign agreements that do not favor us on behalf of us for personal reasons?
Yeah.
Because he's actually not in control.
Yeah.
But there's a power behind him that is Western.
Yeah.
How do we achieve these proper trade policies, proper legislation, when, if we sign some of these accords, it goes against the interests of the puppeteer who's behind this person? What kind of strategy, or we must change tact of how to approach it, because with the history of the West assassinating Pan-Africanists who are pro-African, whenever they come up, and these African leaders who mean well and want Africa to progress are killed, where does that leave us? Because once they sniff or get a whiff that there's a guy here who's becoming popular and is African and will actually bring in policies that will block our products from being sold in those African countries, or will make it far more expensive for us to get natural resources or raw materials from their country, we need to find a way to eliminate him, defame him through propaganda, and eventually even get his own people to kill him, like in the case of Gaddafi. So how do we agitate, knowing that our president is not in control, actually? He's bound by certain treaties that were signed on our behalf by his predecessors. So how do we get out of this rut?
That's the question mark. You just need to be bold. You just need to be bold. You just have to just man up and be like, you know what? We need to revise this. We need to have revised these agreements. We need to, and you know, that's where now also the backing of AU comes in. You understand? We have so many. We have so many of these institutions. We have East Africa Community. We have AU. What are all these institutions doing? They need to back you up. You know,
they have.
Can't fight. You can't fight like a toothless dog. You need backing.
Yeah.
So
you see,
they need proper backing from all the institutions that Africa has. And when they go to the table, they say, you know what, President Addo went to Switzerland, and he said, you know what, here's what it is.
Yeah, I
take
like
it or leave it. We are no longer going to conform to what you want us to do. You know, you guys have been, there's been modern slavery in the cocoa farms. You guys are getting cheap labor in terms of child labor. You guys are doing all sorts of things. So we want to be in control, and we want to protect our own people. So no, we are not going to sell you cocoa no more.
Yeah, we need more Addos in Africa.
Yeah. So I'm just like, okay, damn.
That's what's up. But for more Addos to rise up, then we need to reverse the miseducation.
That's what we're doing.
First, yes, that's exactly why we're doing this show, because we need to reverse that miseducation and help people to unlearn what they've been taught, and to fill their minds with positivity and self-belief as Africans, because the narrative that has been pumped in and inculcated into us is that we can't help ourselves. We're unable. If we need any company to be run well, then we need a white face there.
Yep.
If we need a good football coach, we need a white coach. If we need a good coach for our rugby, he has to be white.
Yeah.
If we want our airline run well, we need a white CEO.
Uh-huh.
Or our telecoms. And it's replicated all over.
Yeah.
Whereby we reached a place whereby we don't have enough self-belief because of the perception that's been created in us since we were kids.
Yep.
Eh? Handed down in generations that no, you can't do it without us.
Yep.
Besides the dark continent.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
War and strife. We can do it. We have the resources.
Yep.
So if we effect a paradigm shift in our people.
Yep.
Then I guess the change starts from within.
Yep. Yeah.
And I like it because, you know, it takes me back to Bob Marley's song.
Yeah.
Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds.
Yep.
And that's... And I now even appreciate like reggae more deeply because they have been telling us this thing. And we always think,
in their weed smoke, as you call it.
yeah, weed inspired. Yeah. Yeah. But you know how it takes you to another level.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they're legalizing it now there. And you know, it's just like the weed against tobacco.
Yeah.
You know, there were, you know, if we're talking about trade now, and tobacco caused so many deaths and cancer. In fact, you know that guy pictured on the Marlboro packet on the horse, he died of cancer.
Yeah.
And they promoted that and made it illegal, and we were smoking cannabis, which has health benefits. Which has industrial.
Oh, well, the UN declassified it from substances.
Why? Why did it take so long? You know, that's like, they made it illegal. They made it illegal for years. Yeah.
But with anyway, this... Pat. Anyway, Pat. We're pressed for time, man. We could go on and on and on. We're pressed for time. So,
yep.
Any last word?
All I can say right now, Africa, arise. We need to get some clarity of thought. We need to be knowledge seekers and find out where we came from and how we got to where we are.
Yeah.
I would ask people not to only depend on mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are driving a certain agenda.
Yeah.
And they know the power of media and they want you to think in a certain way. They don't want you to learn about the atrocities they committed. They don't want you to know about your greatness.
Yeah.
They don't want to know where you who produces what you use right now and the history behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that you enjoy, the blings that you put on your neck,
mm-hmm.
food on your table, where does it come from? And who had to suffer
mm-hmm.
for you to get that food on your table? But we need to find out where we came from and get more Pan-African leaders ready to rise up to achieve Africa's greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot be scared anymore, but we need to spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is power. And 100%. Through that knowledge, we'll effect a paradigm shift and mm-hmm. bring up a generation of Pan-Africans, and they can't kill us all.
I know.
Yep.
Fantastic, man. So, wow. I think it's been an amazing session.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, so to our listeners, as usual, thanks for joining us this week again on the Baraza. You can catch us, you can catch all our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show or the episode, we'd appreciate if you sent us a rating, or if you could simply tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about the show, that is. That would help us a lot. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode.
And Benjamin. Before we pan off, you make some crazy sauce, and I just need to put it out there. You know, where can one purchase your sauce, and can you kindly give us, you know, some details about the sauces that you deal?
Yeah, so the sauce is by Kitch Kitchen. You can purchase the sauce off the website. That's kitch.ke.com. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. That is at kitch.ke.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wow. And Benjamin, you remember the last one you hooked me up with?
Yeah.
That literally my family depleted it within a day.
I know, right?
I was mad. I only had it once. They loved it. They were putting it on everything. Guys, listeners, this is something that you need to try out.
Well, thanks.
It's an experience. It's a journey. It's a journey through Africa.
100%.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the appreciation, man. 100%.
Ah, it's excellent. Yep. You're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for that. So, all right. You know, as usual, I leave guys, and I think I've been on Proverbs. So, in the spirit of knowledge, I will leave the listeners with a proverb again from Africa, which is, knowledge is like a lion. It cannot be gently embraced.
Bam.
To gain knowledge, you have to go after it with all your energy. And make sure you don't tickle the lion too much.
Deep, Benjamin, yes. Yes.
100%. Have a lovely week. Catch you next time.
Yep, bye.
Bye.